Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
All right, so where to start? I think I want to start in the association. I think I want to start with my two half fams. You know, I'm right down the middle. I'm cut right down the middle. Half Chowd, half Frisco. It's true. I'm Frisco fam. Yeah, I'm a Chowd. I'm both. So I owe my two half fams a shout out this morning. Yes, I'm talking about you, my half fam in Chowtown. And yes, my other half fam in Frisco. Hey, Frisco. Because it was a very tough night for Frisco basketball fan, thanks to Chowd basketball team. You can imagine if I did root, how utterly conflicted I'd be. It's a good thing I don't root. Except for this, something to talk about. But if I did have a rooting interest, man, that would be a very, very tough night, right? The Chowds put on a historic curb stomping of those Frisco fans. Of course, I'm talking about Celtics Warriors. Of course, I'm talking about the fact that the Boston Celtics have been competing in pro hoops since 1946 and never, not one time, had they ever led any game by 44 at halftime until last night. And they did it against a good team. They did it against a hot team. It's almost a letdown when you think about it that they only won that game by 52 after that start. Until you remember that they won that game by 52. And they didn't just beat the Dubs by 52. They put up 140 on the Dubs. A Warriors team that, by the way, came in playing their best ball of the year. They came into last night 3-0 on their current road trip. So, like, this is not some doom and gloom segment for you Frisco fan. I'm not here to go all, hey, Frisco fan, look up. The sky is falling in your face. I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that on Dubs Nation because the sky is not falling on Dubs Nation. Their team simply ran into the sharpest, most jagged buzzsaw in the association last night. Nothing new for the Celtics either, man. They have been on one. They are on one right now. Currently in the midst of one of the wildest heaters ever in the association. That's not even hyperbole. Boston has run off 11 straight wins, and it's almost like winning is no longer good enough for them anymore. It's almost like the Celtics need to humiliate you. They need to eviscerate you to feel good about the dub. Winning is not enough. They're winning a certain way. They need to vaporize you. They need to humiliate you. They're not just winning every night. They're leaving a full, scorched earth path of destruction behind them. As an example, Boston's average margin of victory on their current streak is more than 22 points per game. It feels like, if it does, that you've never heard of a team that's had a stretch that dominant ever. That's probably because there has never been a team that's had a stretch that dominant ever. Not in the NBA. According to Elias, that is the best point differential in a 10-plus game win streak ever. And Boston is only getting hotter as they go because they've won their last six by an average of nearly 30. They've won two of their last six by at least 50, which is why worth giving my half-Chowd fam a major shout-out this morning. Yo, half-fam. Your team is on another level right now. Your team is on a historic heater right now. It's not even about the Warriors. It's not even about what happened to them. It's about what the Celtics did to them. That said, the Dubs did not exactly help themselves with that game plan. You know, the plan to back off of Jaylen Brown and let him have open looks from the three pretty much every single time he went down the floor. Yeah, that kind of blew up in their face, right? The Dubs let that dude have wide-ass open threes from the very jump, and from the very jump, that dude was drilling those wide-ass open threes. Then after the game, as you might imagine, Brown couldn't wait to talk about it, and talk about how that strategy was incredibly disrespectful.
If you want to dare me to shoot, we can do that too. You know what I mean? I thought it was a little disrespectful, but, you know, we took advantage of it and we didn't look back.
I guarantee he thought it was a little more than a little disrespectful. You know, I don't even think that Steve Kerr was trying to show him any disrespect whatsoever. But he definitely did poke a bear, and then that bear got pissed off and mauled everything in sight. Draymond said they put together that defensive game plan 15 minutes before tip. That showed. Hell, it looked like they threw together that defensive game plan 15 seconds before tip. It sounded like, or it looked like, they threw that defensive game plan together while the ball was in midair for opening tip. But again, I'm not here to bury the Dubs, because they're not winning that game no matter what. They're not winning that game last night regardless of what their defensive game plan was. They tried. They tried something different. It bit them in the ass. But the hottest team in the league showed up with their A-plus game to defend their home court and to send a message against a team that celebrated a championship on that very court less than 2 years ago. No, they came with some attitude, and they've been playing really well of late. So much has changed since the Warriors beat the Celtics in the finals 2 years ago. The Celtics wanted to make sure that everybody knew that so much has changed. They really wanted to send that message loud and clear, which is why they were never letting the Dubs out of there with a dub last night. Sure, that game may have been tied at 21 at one point. But then they went on like a 61-18 run. Like crazy, crazy run. There was no way Golden State was leaving that building with a win. Not a chance, but they'll take it from me. Just take it from their own head coach.
You flush it down the toilet. We had a great road trip, 3-1. We've had a million games. So Boston was amazing. We weren't beating them today.
To paraphrase Steve Kerr, who is paraphrasing Jalen Hurts, you take yourself a deuce, you don't just stare at it. You flush it.
We're going to flush it and move on.
Listen to the coach channeling Hurts and his flush it and move on.
You flush it down the toilet. We had a great road trip.
I'm surprised he didn't go full Sirianni.
We've had a million games.
I'm surprised he didn't go full Sirianni and hit us with a less guarding equals Jalen takeover.
Less thinking equals
Jalen takeover.
Less thinking equals
Jalen takeover.
Less thinking equals
Jalen 100% beyond the arc. That was pretty much the story of the game. But Steve Kerr is right, though. About a couple of other things, actually. The Warriors did just have a huge road trip. 3-1. You know, that proverbial, if you had said to them before they hit the road that they'd come home 3-1, would they take that all day long? They didn't just have a huge road trip, and they weren't beating the Celtics on their A-plus game in their house last night, but it is still tough to stomach a head caving like that. My guy, Steph Curry. 0-9. Oh, hey, Steph.
Hey, Jim Rome.
Hey, Steph Curry.
Hey, Jim Rome.
Hey, Steph Curry.
Hey, Jim Rome.
Hey, Steph Curry. Hey, Steph Curry. My man was 0-9 beyond the arc. Now, he came in with a bad knee. Hey, Steph Curry.
Hey, Jim Rome.
Hey, Steph Curry. What up, dude?
Hey, Jim Rome.
Hey, Steph Curry. I said, what up, dude?
When you have a creative idea and it doesn't work and you're taking the ball out of the basket and they're hitting, you know, 10 threes in the first quarter, like, that's what we used to do with teams. And it's kind of demoralizing, especially on the road when, a shot that you're comfortable giving up or whatever the case is, they're taking advantage of it.
Down but not out. But I got to say, I don't remember the last time I heard my dude that demoralized. In fact, ever. Ever. He said it, you know, you have a creative idea, it didn't work. Yeah, I know all about that, my man. I know all about creative ideas that don't work and how demoralizing that can be. I get sent hundreds of creative ideas that don't work every single day. I'm not running into a buzzsaw. This is where I live. I live with a buzzsaw coming at me every single day. A buzzsaw of terrible takes. Although I guess it is pretty generous to call a Mama Cass reset or a Rat Fam nomination as a, quote, creative idea. Because they're not. but they are definitely demoralizing every time I get one. So let me tell you about something. The other day, I come across a product that all of us should be carrying around. It's amazing. It's something different for fresh breath. It is an incredible product called Zelman's Minty Mouth. And guys, it is a game changer. If you're up in the grill of somebody else and you're making your case for whatever it is, make sure your breath is fresh. Zelman's cleans your breath in a way that other mints don't and can't, because it's not just a mint. It's a functional breath freshener capsule that you swallow. It's clinically tested against the toughest offenders, even garlic and onions. You just pop two or three in your mouth, suck the minty coating, then swallow the capsule for the confidence of fresh, clean breath that lasts for hours. The product is nothing. The product is like nothing else you've ever tried. It fights bad breath in your mouth. It then goes right down to your gut. This is the ultimate hack to get rid of coffee, garlic, or smoker's breath. You're going to like having the confidence of long-lasting fresh breath, or you get your money back guaranteed. These folks will give you your money back. Not that you're going to want it, but they will. They've got free shipping if you order three packs or more, and trust me, you're going to want more. And nobody likes to pay for shipping. Go to Zelmans.com right now. That's Zelmins.com. Right now, you'll get 15% off when you use the promo code ROME. Zelmins.com. You do have to use the code ROME to get your 15% savings, ROME. If I weren't the mental warrior that I am, believe me, that would have beat me down and bludgeoned me to death many a moon ago. But not every plan works. Bad plans happen, right? They happen to us all. At least the Warriors had a plan. At least they tried something. It didn't work. But at least they showed an off-speed pitch, and they gave Boston something to think about, a different look. It's just that Boston was sitting on that. Boston read that off-speed pitch right out of the hand, and then reversed it and blasted it out of the park and into the orbit, and it's still traveling right about now. But then again, no shame in that, because that's what they're doing to everybody right about now. Every single pitch comes out of the pitcher's hand like a beach ball to the Celtics right now, which is why I'm spending so much time on the Open, which is why I had to shout out the half-chowed fam this morning. Not only do your Celtics have the best record in the NBA, they've got the best record by a mile. They have six more wins than any other team. They're riding an 11-game winning streak. They're beating the ever-living hell out of everybody along the way. And clearly, they're hungry for more. So hungry that they're now apparently filming behind the scenes right now for a multi-part documentary. This team doesn't just know they're having a special season. They think they're having the type of season that must be immortalized. At least that's how it came across when owner Wick Grosbeck made this announcement on WEEI on Friday.
There are nothing to officially report yet, but we are in production on a multi-part, absolutely top quality, fantastic documentary series on along the lines of hopefully The Last Dance and so on. And we are deep into that. We've signed contracts. Film is being filmed and archives are being gone through, and it's in process. Wow. Really exciting.
Films are being filmed. Archives are being archived. Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
film is being,
you know, you're feeling good about yourself if you make that announcement right now. I mean, they should feel good about themselves, but not good enough to compare it to The Last Dance.
That's bullshit.
I agree with Mike on that. I agree with Mike on that. I mean, Wick, again, you're having an amazing year. You're a dominant team right now. But are you already going to compare your doc, quote, along the lines of The Last Dance? I mean, Mike, reaction.
For real. That's bullshit.
I agree with you, Mike. That is. You mean the docuseries about the GOAT at the height of his powers? Going for a second three-peat.
I've never read that.
The Last Dance. The one about the 98 Bulls. I got to agree with Mike. Half fam. I hate to go against you and go against no fam, but I got to go with no fam. I mean, I like your team a lot. You're having an amazing season. You are on one of the all-time heaters. No questioning that. But you've got a long way to go before anybody is going to compare you to or equate any of you to MJ or No Tippin' Pippin' or The Worm or Phil. Like,
Phil,
I'll give the Celtics their bleeping credit. For real.
For real.
I just spent a Monster Open giving them their bleeping credit. For real.
Credit.
But maybe we dial back and go easy and relax on the 98 Bulls comp. Maybe we don't break out the, quote, Alan Parsons just yet. I don't know. Maybe you finish the year and win a ring first and then start to work your way up from there. Now, that said, I'm not saying I won't watch it. I'm not saying that I don't have an interest in this.
Film is being filmed.
I want to see the part of that doc that covers the Ime Udoka firing. Not because I think there's going to be any new salacious details that shed any more light on exactly how that went down, but just because I can't wait for the part where they cut to a newscast and the anchor is all, if you're getting ready for work right now, then you're probably not Ime
Udoka. If you're getting ready for work right now, then you're probably not Doug Collins.
I mean, things are working out pretty well for Joe Mazzulla. But it's not like this team hasn't had its own fair share of drama. I'm not saying their story and this season couldn't make for a decent doc. There are a million docs. And this one could be a good one. I'm just saying, why don't we pump the brakes on the Last Dance comparisons? There's still no MJ, no Scotty,
no
Dennis,
Tippin.
No Phil. Let's face it. There isn't even a Boston newscaster on the level of, if you're getting ready for work, guy.
If you're getting ready for work right now, then you're probably not Doug Collins.
If there was, he'd probably sound something like, if you're getting ready to curb stomp an NBA team right now, then you probably are the Boston Celtics.
Right now, then you're probably not Doug Collins.
There's really nothing to compare to the 98 Bulls or that Last Dance doc. And it's not just because of the worldwide pandemic. There's nothing like that. This is why people continually cite and point to the Last Dance doc. Let's not get carried away. Maybe win one ring, that ring, before you go to there. Wick was feeling it, though. 1-800-636-8686. Take either side of that. Are you one of millions struggling with premature hair thinning and hair loss? Or maybe you're scared about inheriting that thinning look because it just runs in the family. Introducing Provia, a real solution that delivers on its promise without the harsh side effects, unwanted chemicals, and unpleasant smells. Thanks to our friends that developed GenuCell Skincare, Provia uses Procapil. It's a natural ingredient to effectively target the three main causes of premature hair thinning for men and women of any age. By supporting scalp circulation, the delivery of nourishing nutrients, and hair follicle anchoring to your scalp, Provia guarantees more hair on your head than in the shower or on your comb, or 100% of your money back. And right now, new customers can save over 50% off Provia's introductory package at proviahair.com/Rome. Every package includes a full 60-day supply of Provia serum for daily use, plus their super concentrate that could give you faster, more noticeable results. And every order includes your choice of a free gift at checkout. See results for yourself right now. ProviaHair.com/Rome. ProviaHair.com/Rome. These statements and products have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or condition. Kurt Warner. Kurt, it's always great to have you on the show. Kurt, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Good, good, Kurt. Appreciate you. Let's talk combine, if you don't mind. Let me start with the quarterbacks, of course. Caleb Williams, Kurt, did not participate in any of the drills, citing that all the game tape he's already put out there is already out there. But as part of your study ball series on YouTube, you've been breaking down his tape. So what do you see when you watch his film, and what are your biggest takeaways from his college career?
I think the biggest thing with Caleb is, you know, he's a complete player from, you know, what we've seen. We've seen enough football. You know, he kind of mentioned that in his interviews. Like, I've played a lot of games, and he has, and he's played at a high level in most of those games. You've got all the skills, all the talent. You know, people throw around generational talent. I don't ever like to put that pressure on a kid, but I think you understand that he's got a great feel for the game. He's got the ability to make plays, you know, off schedule as well as on schedule. You know, sometimes it's tough to watch these college tapes and really get a sense of how it's going to translate because these offenses are so different. You know, but I think if you look at the body of work, you find games that you say, okay, I see a guy that can play in the pocket, you know, that can be patient in the pocket, that isn't just looking to take off. There's other games where he did more creating than playing in the pocket, and, you know, some of that was based on, you know, the plays and the play calls around him. But, you know, that's what you're trying to decipher is, can he be a guy that plays in the pocket first and foremost? Because we fall in love with the athletic quarterbacks, and I understand why. You know, what guys like Lamar and Josh and Patrick and those guys can do is so special, and it wows us. But I still, when you go back and watch the NFL week by week by week, the teams that usually win are the ones where the quarterback plays the best inside the pocket, not just running around and creating 10 or 15 special plays a game, because that doesn't happen. You're still more efficient you know, when you play inside the pocket and you play on schedule. So I always look for these guys and say, okay, can they do that? And once I feel like they can do that to a certain level, now you start adding those tangible things, those, you know, their speed and their elusiveness and their ability to make plays on the run. And that's where I think you start to get special players. And Caleb is a guy that I believe can do all of it based off of what I've seen, you know, over the course of the last couple of years.
He is Hall of Famer Kurt Warner joining us. So, Kurt, with Williams projected to go first overall, Chicago then can use Justin Fields as a trade asset, of course. How much progress did you see from Fields last season? And then where do you think the most logical landing spot for him might be?
Yeah, you saw progress. I think I saw progress with Justin, you know, all 3 years that he's played. And he's gotten better and he's gotten more comfortable. I think the unfortunate thing is, you know, you talk about the situation or the pieces around him or the different offensive coordinators. And then just, you know, he had room to grow. You know, when he came in from the NFL, I don't think he was quite ready to be a starter and all the things that it entails. And specifically what I was talking about with Caleb is the ability to play and process in the pocket. So that's where he's grown. But I think the hardest thing for young quarterbacks is when you throw them in and they're not ready to do that, now they're just trying to survive. Now they're just trying to play against the best players in the world, and you're asking them to grow in that capacity. That's a really, really hard thing to do, and why I think you see guys like Jordan Love that sit for a couple years, and they can grow kind of behind the scenes, and they can take those practice reps where they're not worried about running around and making a play. They're worried about playing the position and growing into that position. So I think it's a little unfortunate for Justin Fields, although I have seen him get better. And, you know, and to me, when you ask about the perfect landing spot, I don't really know, because at the end of the day, I think you want Justin to have to be a complete quarterback. You know, a lot of people throw around Pittsburgh. Well, yeah, maybe he could be good in Pittsburgh if they're going to run kind of what Arthur Smith ran in Tennessee, which was more downhill run game with those two backs and play action, which simplifies some of the passing game. You know, so maybe he could be really good in that situation. You know, a lot of people throw around Atlanta as well, and they've got weapons and all of that stuff. They run the football well. But again, I think at the end of the day, you're hoping that wherever Justin goes, he has a chance to develop into a complete quarterback. Instead of just finding a fit that says, oh, he can do what he's good at now, I think the bottom line is you're trying to find a quarterback that can win you a championship. And so Justin has to grow in that regard, and he's got to find a place that can help him. And you want to have success while you help him, but can help him to get to that point where he doesn't feel like he's got to do everything and make every play like I felt like he was doing in Chicago.
Kurt Warner is an analyst for NFL Network, also Westwood One Sports. He joins us once again. Kurt, what about Jaden Daniels? He was the only quarterback who did not get his measurements taken in Indy, so we're going to have to wait for him to officially weigh in at LSU's Pro Day on March 27th. I mean, maybe it's fair to raise questions about his potential durability, but how do you think his skill set translates to the next level?
There's a lot of really good stuff on tape. I mean, when you go back and watch, and, you know, he kind of had one of those really, really special kind of Joe Burrow-ish type years this year. So you go back and watch the tape, and there's not a lot of bad tape. You know, broke down his game against Alabama. You know, there was a little bit of ups and downs against Alabama, really good defense, and sometimes when his technique gets away from him, like any quarterback, when their technique gets away from them, you know, they can struggle on, you know, some throws right in front of them. But then there's some other games that I popped on, Mississippi State and Ole Miss, and you just watch and you're like, man, he does so many things really well. And I think it's always hard when, you know, a guy really has that kind of one breakout season, because I think we're always wondering, okay, was that just kind of happenstance where it all came together with the talent around him at one time and he was able to have that season? Or is that the guy, you know, that we're going to see week in and week out? And I think those are the questions that you raise a little bit with Jaden Daniels. But when you watch the tape, there is so much to like, and there are so many different ways that he can make plays. And I actually think, you know, from a technique standpoint, he's pretty solid with his technique for the most part. So when he plays in that, he's a pretty accurate quarterback and accurate down the field. So I really liked what I saw on tape this year. I think you would always like to see a little bit more, of tape. But yeah, I mean, really, really good. And I'm excited to see what he is at the next level, because a lot of his scrambles and stuff, you know, really came more off of drop back passes and then creating, not so much the quarterback run game as much as we've seen some guys in the past. So, you know, interested with all these guys. You want all these guys to do well. You see some good, you see some bad from them. And, you know, I tell everybody this, Jim, is that we can analyze and evaluate all we want what they do in college. Every one of these guys is going to have to be better in the pros. They are going to have to up their game at the next level. And that, to me, is what makes evaluation so hard, is they can't just be that guy that they were for the last 2, 3, 4 years. They have got to be better. And who of these guys, which of these guys has the ability to go farther, to reach their ceiling, to continue to improve year in and year out? Because if you don't, any one of these guys could get swallowed up in the NFL. And then if these guys can grow, you know, I always use Tom Brady. Seemed like he got better every year, even to the point where he was 45 years old. And so guys that incrementally get better every year are the ones that continue to thrive in the NFL, and I don't think any of us know which of these guys will be able to do that.
Hey, Kurt, really quickly before you go, what about your dude Keaton Slovis and the combine he had? How did he look to you, and how do you think he projects now?
Well, I was surprised at how fast he ran.
Yeah, right?
For sure. I think a 4.56 to show some of the athletic ability and a guy that can move and create with his feet. Throwing-wise, you know, he's a good thrower. He's a good thrower down the field too, kind of that second-level throw, which is what, to me, what really separates guys at the next level. Combine, I thought, was a little bit up and down. But knowing him, I was able to talk to him a little bit, and I could see some of it was kind of trying to guess where guys were going to be and changing a little bit of his throwing motion. But he's a guy that I never really thought, you know, got a perfect fit in college. So he bounced around USC, Pitt, and BYU. So I think he's a guy that could surprise some people at the next level and definitely make a roster given the right opportunity.
He is a member of the NFL Hall of Fame, a Super Bowl champ, a 2-time NFL MVP, of course, an analyst for NFL Network and Westwood One Sports. Kurt Warner, our guest. Kurt, appreciate it so much. As always, an impeccable job by you. And it's great to have you back, Kurt. Thanks for making time for it.
Always good to talk to you, Romy. Talk to you soon.
Let's talk for a minute about O'Reilly Auto Parts, because they're in the business of keeping your car on the road and offering helpful service and parts knowledge that you need for all your maintenance and repairs. They have thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. And they can also test your battery for free. If it needs to be replaced, they will help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. When you need a specialty tool to finish the job, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and ask about their loaner tool program. Simply pay a refundable deposit and borrow the right tool, then get your deposit back when it's returned. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto, do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Rome. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/Rome. So what I really wanted to do was give LaCap his flowers today. And in fact, I still want to. And I'm going to. It's just that, as always, this dude makes it so, so hard to do so, when it should be the easiest thing in the world to do so. Because the guy does things that have never been done and will never be done. So why is it so hard to acknowledge it and give him his flowers? because LaCapiness and LaBagginess just makes it that hard to heap praise on that dude, even as he accomplishes things that are so easy to praise. I hope I haven't lost you yet. I'll give you an example. Scoring 40,000 points in an NBA career is so outrageous, and it's so impressive, it doesn't even compute. Do you have any idea how hard that is to make an accomplishment like that difficult to praise or hype? I can barely wrap my head around it. The accomplishment, I mean. Do you know how baggy you have to act to make an accomplishment that incredible actually difficult to praise or hype? The guy is absolutely amazing. And that's still true. Even at 39, not amazing for a 39-year-old, amazing, period. And he's 39. Of course he's the only member of the 40,000-point club. And I've got a pretty good feeling that it's going to be a very lonely club, because it's almost impossible to imagine anybody else joining him in that club anytime soon or anytime ever. 40,000. The number, again, doesn't even seem real. Especially since the Lakers couldn't even bother to win on his record-setting night. And then had the nerve to sit around and actually blame the all-time scoring leader for it.
He might have to stop breaking records because we always lose on any time he break a record.
Good take, AD. Strong take, AD. Not that take, baby. Not that take. Maybe he should stop breaking records because every time he breaks a record, we lose. Or you lose every time you play a team that's better than you. I mean, 80, come on, man.
He might have to stop.
It's got
to
be so annoying, right, to have a teammate who's always breaking records. That's got to get so old. It must be so much work to make sure that the team still loses, even though there's a GOAT who's still playing at a really high level, constantly setting records on that team. I don't know, AD. Maybe instead of trying to be funny when you're not, you actually pick your guy up and score more than 17 at home against the defending champs on LeBron's record-setting night. Just a thought. Instead of blaming him for the loss. Oh, that was a joke. Not a good one. I'm not even sure it was a joke. But you're right, way easier for Braun to just stop breaking records. That'll bring some more wins, I'm sure. The second he stops breaking records, I'm sure you'll just start ripping off dubs like the Celtics and beating people down. Speaking of the defending champs, I mentioned that right now they're the second choice to win it all. That's according to Vegas. I'm not sure they're not the ones to beat. I mean, I know Boston is scary, really scary. But so are the Nuggets. In fact, I'm going to go as far as to say, regardless of what Vegas says, and Vegas is almost never wrong, otherwise Vegas wouldn't look like Vegas, right? If Vegas were wrong very often, you wouldn't have hotels going up through the clouds every week. But they are sometimes wrong. Sometimes the house gets beat badly. I'm going to say the Nuggets are still the ones to beat. And yes, I hype the Celtics. I'm not talking out both sides of my mouth. I'm just saying the Nuggets, until somebody rips that strap, that chip, that Larry O from them, they're still the ones to beat. Sorry, half fam. I love the way these dudes think. I love the way these dudes compete. I love the way these dudes show up. You know I love Michael Malone. Michael Malone's one of my favorite coaches ever in any sport. Love him. And I love the way the guys ball for him. Like Jamal Murray, for instance. Love Jamal Murray. Love the way he talked about that win on LeBron's big night.
We just wanted to take the life out of the arena, and we did a good job of just, like I said, weathering the storm and throwing our own haymakers.
He's right. He's right. He knew the Lakers would know that LeBron was on the verge of a historic night. He knew that the Lakers would know the world champs were coming in. Man, that's... They wear the crown. They know that everybody's lying in wait for them. So he just very casually said something so awesome. I love that he said something so awesome, yet was so casual about the whole thing. Quote, "We just wanted to take the life out of the arena."
Take the life out of the arena.
So a matter of fact, we just wanted to suck all the hope and life and oxygen out of that arena. We just want to make every single person in that arena miserable on LeCap's big night. That's the mentality that makes Denver, Denver. They're cold-blooded, they're calm, they're focused, but they're intense. And they're killers. Meanwhile, the mentality, this is where I come back to LeBag. Why am I not celebrating him? Why am I not focused on his 40 gur? Well, the mentality that makes LeBag, LeBag, was also on full display Saturday. Because, of course, his big accomplishment had to come with a fresh LeCap from LeCapper himself. Of course, LeCap couldn't play the hero without also playing the victim. Listen to this.
To be quite honest with you, everybody wanted to see me fail when I got to the league. Everybody was just like, it's no way he's going to be able to exceed, you know, the expectations that's put upon him. There's no way. I seen, for the first time in a long time, I seen a commercial that was played before my first game. And when I rewatched it today for the first time, I was like, I think they was mentioning like all the greats that ever played the game of basketball. I think it was like Big O and Michael and Kareem and Kobe and I forgot who all else was in that commercial, whatever the case may be. Could be wrong about some of the names that I mentioned, but it was, and then it was like, and the next one, LeBron James, and I didn't even see that commercial when it happened, but I was like, watching it today, I was like, what the hell? Like that expectation on an 18-year-old kid, like that was insane to just think about it. And I was watching it today, I was like, I wish that on no kid.
The hell are you even talking about? The hell are you even talking about? I mean, dude, even more incredible than him saying that is him believing it, which he does. Just give me the very first line again, Alvin, of what he said before we get lost in all that nonsense. Give me the very first line.
To be quite honest with you, everybody wanted to see me fail when I got to the league.
Stop. To be quite honest with you, everybody wanted to see me fail when I got to the league? Is that how you remember it, dude?
I wish that on no kid.
You wish that on no kid. I'll get to that in a minute. That's not how I remember it. That's not how any of us remember it, Bron. Only you. Wait, they put you up there with Big O and Mike and Kareem and Kobe before you even played a game? And your big takeaway is that everybody wanted you to fail? What are you talking about? They put you up with some legends of the game.
Everybody wanted to see me fail when I got there.
Everybody? They televised your high school games on ESPN. They put you on the cover of Sports Illustrated before you even graduated high school with the title The Chosen One. Can I repeat that? They put you on the cover of Sports Illustrated before you even graduated high school with the title The Chosen One, but your take is everybody wanted you to fail. Listen, it is incredible that you managed to meet and exceed those expectations. It's more than incredible, it's frankly impossible. It's the most impressive thing about this incredibly impressive dude. But pretty much everybody was rooting for the guy to meet those expectations. What are you talking about? When I got to the NBA, everybody wanted me to fail.
Everybody wanted to see me fail.
Where does that even come from? You were essentially hailed as the savior for the city of Cleveland, essentially hailed as the next MJ. Virtually everybody was behind you. Fans, corporate America, the shoe companies, these people giving you huge bags of cash. Virtually everybody couldn't wait to see what you were going to do. What do you mean everybody wanted you to fail? It wasn't until you stabbed the city of Cleveland in the heart on live television that Cleveland and much of the country after viewing the decision, turned on you. Then they start to think, you know, wait a minute, this guy's a bag. That's not cool. That's not right. You know, I've said it before. I'll always be on record as saying this. I knew for a fact he was staying in Cleveland. There was no way that guy would go on live TV and let Cleveland know I'm out of here and stab them in the heart on live television. And that's exactly what he did. And that's fine. We all make mistakes. But yeah, at that point, dude, people started turning on you. But it's not accurate to say that everybody wanted to see you fail when you got into the league. In fact, it's so inaccurate, it's the opposite of the truth. Now, fast forward to today. Yes, some people do want to see you fail. You know why? Because of comments like that. Because on your big night, you decide you want to go victim instead of playing the humble hero. Because he says he wouldn't wish that kind of pressure of expectation on any kid. Yet, frankly, he's constantly raising the pressure and expectations on his own kid. People root against you, dude, because you bag it up in moments like that. Once again, the incredible dichotomy to me about LeBron is that no human being has ever found it easier to dunk on every other living person on the planet. He can dunk on every human being. How many people are there on the planet? 100 trillion? He could dunk on every one of them at 39, easily. But the problem is when he says things like that, that other 100 trillion can almost as easily dunk right on him and hang from the rim. All right, 8.1 billion. Sorry, not 100 trillion. Can you really make a distinction between 8.1 billion and 100 trillion? It's kind of the same, right? Anyway, that's why Saturday night was such a perfectly LeBaggy night. It had both the historic greatness and historic bagginess that are coming to define this dude. Historic greatness, he did something that will never, ever be equaled. Historic bagginess and a total and complete destruction of a once proud movie franchise. Those were his legacies. Historic greatness, historic bagginess, and the historic destruction of a proud movie franchise.
I wish that on no kid.
Listen. There's the last dance, right? And Mike was famous for inventing slights that were real or imagined. That's where you guys edge. I mean, this is no different. All the great ones do it. Kobe did it. Mike did it. Tiger did it. All the great ones do it. Of course. But for LeBron to sit up there on that night, a historically great night in defeat, but for him to actually utter out loud, everybody wanted me to fail when I got to the NBA, it's not only an absurd take, it's a lie. It's just, where do you come up with this stuff, dude?
People probably think I'm lying about that too. Huh?
And how do you even watch that commercial? Yes, we think you're lying about that. How do you watch that commercial and then that's what your takeaway is? They're throwing you in before you've accomplished one thing with the greatest of the game ever. Yet they want you to fail? I don't make that connection. How do you see that and then take that away 20 years later? I mean, that's just, for lack of a better term, that's just whack and wrong. Are you craving some protein after a good workout? Do not make a shake or eat a bar. Instead, grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Wild Trapper, because Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and tender, and it's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. Old Trapper is a family-owned business that takes smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. I mean, who wants dried-out, tough beef in a bag? No one. It's like eating a shoe. Old Trapper is the real deal, and it comes in four amazing flavors. Old Fashioned is sweetened with a touch of brown sugar goodness, teriyaki, peppered, and hot and spicy for those of you who like to take things up a notch. Next time you want a great protein and energy snack that you can have anytime, anywhere, grab some Old Trapper beef jerky. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares Old Trapper with your beef. Bud Black, buddy. What's going on? How you doing, Goat? How you doing, Skip?
Jim, great to hear your voice. Thanks for the acknowledgement. I've been fortunate, Jim. It's as you know, we've been at this a long time. I think we're all very grateful.
Exactly, buddy. Well said. More so now than ever before because of the perspective we have. As I mentioned, bud, our conversations are a March tradition. I always look forward to it, so bring me up to date. How great does it feel to be back in Arizona and back at it with your team?
Well, it never gets old for sure. People ask me all the time, how's it feel? It still feels like I was 10 years old in Longview, Washington, going to John Knoll Ballpark, the first game of the year. It doesn't change. I think the enthusiasm of the players, the feel of, a ballpark early in spring. For me, there's nothing better. I think there's just there's something about spring training that's magical, and the buildup to the regular season. It's something that I think all of us in the game never take for granted and really just love it. And it's just a great time of the year.
We are talking to Bud Black, manager of the Colorado Rockies. You know, Bud, when I look at it, you'll say it's about the players because I know it's you. But with Dusty Baker and Terry Francona stepping away from the dugout, you are now one of just three active managers with over 1,000 career wins, along with Bruce Bochy and Bob Melvin. I know you'll tell me about the players, but it's a big number, a really significant milestone if you ask me for a manager. What does that number represent to you?
Well, again, you said it right. It's about the players, and I think it's about the organization and their trust and the guys you named, right? To manage the team, those five guys that you named, I've known those guys for a long, long time. I played with Tito. I played for Dusty. Boach and Melvin. We've been going at it for a long time. I think it's just the people you're surrounded with and the trust factor and the belief of what you do and the coaching staff you've assembled to keep going. And I feel, again, very fortunate to be able to say that I've passed the test of time in this and to be grouped with guys like that and others. It's pretty cool, and it's pretty cool stuff.
Okay, I'm glad to hear you say that. It's really cool stuff, and these are some of the best that we're talking about. Bud Black joining us. I'm going to ask you specifically about a couple of your guys, but when you and I spoke last spring, you were pretty upfront about saying that the upcoming season was going to be largely about player development, and you were right. So what's your outlook heading into this season?
Well, we'd like to make strides, Jim, for sure. Last year was really tough record-wise. A lot of that was based on some injuries, but you can't use that as an excuse. We just didn't play well. But in the meantime, we transitioned some new players into our everyday lineup, our Gold Glove center fielder, Brenton Doyle, our left fielder, Nolan Jones, our shortstop, Ezekiel Tovar. I think those guys, look to be the cornerstone, along with Ryan McMahon and Brendan Rodgers, of our group moving forward. Chris Bryant, right? I mean, right in the middle of it, has to play well. Jim, position player wise, I think we got guys, but we got to keep them on the field. They got to play, and they got to play to their capability. Pitching wise, it's always a wild card. The rotation, as you know, is so important to the success of a team. Our guys got to go to the post. I like our five guys. They compete. They're built the right way. They got guts and heart. I love that about them. So we'll see. That's why we play, right? I mean, there's things that happen every year that you don't expect, and we're hoping that we're one of those teams that, come out of nowhere and surprise people. And I know the guys in the room are, sort of wired and thinking that way, that you know, anything's possible.
We are talking to Bud Block. There's so much good stuff in there, Bud, that I was going to ask you about. So I'm going to respond to some of that. You mentioned Chris Bryant. So one of the biggest positives this year, it seems to me, is that he's healthy after playing in just 122 games over the past 2 years. How energized and rejuvenated does he seem to be right now? And how has he looked to you so far this spring?
Yeah, he seems a little different in that, you know, all players, Jim, who get to this level have a lot of pride and a lot of confidence in their game. And, you know, Chris has been banged up. And, you know, from the time he signed, you know, his back started bothering him in April of 2 years ago. And he's never quite gotten on track. But he had a good offseason as far as, you know, in the weight room and training. He looks a little stronger to me. His upper body, his legs look a little better. He's put on a little bit of weight, which I think is a good thing. And just talking to him, there's an edge to him that tells me, you know, he wants to, you know, get back on track and prove to, you know, I think, to prove to the baseball world that he's the player that, you know, he was with the Cubs when he won, you know, MVP, when he was Rookie of the Year, when he was, you know, part of that Cubs World Series team, a big part of that. So. He's in a good spot.
We are talking to Bud Block. You know, Bud, one of the guys you mentioned was Brendan Rodgers. He had suffered a shoulder surgery or injury in Cactus League play. He came back from that surgery in late July, closed out the season swinging a hot bat. Given that you've got him batting cleanup some this spring, how big of a year do you expect him to have at the plate?
Well, you know, he was always projected to be a major league bat out of the draft, you know, when he was drafted in 2015. I think now's his time to really be that guy. I mean, he's going to hit in the middle of the order somewhere. You know, it's a swing that translate to all pitching, right? He can hit velocity with the fastball. His short swing can get to a breaking ball. He's a good hitter. He's built to hit, and he won a Gold Glove 2 years ago. So he's a really good all around player. But you know, he's been banged up a little bit in his career. A full year of Brendan Rodgers would be fun to watch, both on defense and with the bat. And, you know, again, we need him. We need them all, Jim. We need him and Bryant and McMahon and, you know, the young guys I mentioned. And of course, Charlie Blackmon, who's, you know, still an integral part of our team in so many ways. We need these guys to play well.
We are talking to Bud Block. Of course, I can't let you go. You mentioned your rotation, but when it comes to talking about arms and pitchers, there's very few people, buddy, that can match your experience. Why don't we talk about that for a minute? You got Kyle Freeland back as your number one starter. What did you take away from his spring training debut Friday? And then maybe as a follow-up, how do things look for the rest of the rotation to you?
Well, you know, Kyle pitched really well. I think the focus with Kyle, a couple things. He was obviously frustrated in his year last year, and I think he got away from, you know, a little bit of pitching with energy with the fastball. So that was a focus, I think, in the offseason to maybe get a mile or two back on his fastball. And the other day he was up to 93 and pitched, you know, really consistently around 92. And the changeup has to come into play with Kyle. You know, his secondary pitches, the slider and the curveball, are solid, but I think the changeup has to come into play a little bit more. That's been a focus, too. But I mentioned earlier, he's built the right way, man. From Denver, you know, so committed to the organization, invested in the Rockies. I think he's going to bounce back. Cal Quantrill, who we got from the Indians, is a solid major league pitcher. 15 wins 2 years ago. Pitcher's pitcher, good stuff, pedigree. I think he's going to help us. Austin Gomber, you know, showed flashes last year. He's a pretty consistent major league starter that a lot of teams would love to have in their rotation. And then three guys are, you know, battling a little bit in Ryan Feltner, who's pitching today, Dakota Hudson pitching today, Peter Lambert pitching today. All three guys with things to prove and really want to reestablish themselves as guys, major league pitchers. So those are our guys. A lot of great work ethic with these fellas and a lot of commitment and investment in our group. And, you know, it's really great to watch these guys work.
Yeah, it's great. It's great when you feel that good about them personally and professionally, and you know what they're about and their character and their grind and their work ethic. But so one last thought. You and I talked about this at the very top of the conversation, but you're looking to take that next jump. You open up the regular season, Bud, against the Diamondbacks. Arizona won 52 games in 2021. They jump all the way to 84 wins in a trip to the World Series last year. I understand we're talking about different clubs, different situations, but can you see your club taking a major step this year the way Torrey Lavella's club did last year?
You know, it can happen, Jim, for sure. I wouldn't count us out. You know, I'd like to think we can. We got to stay healthy. You know, you mentioned earlier, and I believe our guys are wired the right way. If we stay on the field, get some momentum, we definitely can. You know, we're in a tough division, as you know. I'm sure you're looking at the AL West and looking at those names. I mean, we play, close to 90 games against that group. And we got to get after it against our division for sure. But like I mentioned earlier, anything's possible. We get on a roll. We get guys have good years, not career years, but good solid years from the group. There's enough talent in there to make some noise, in our National League.
But I hear what you're saying. So, and you really can't say it, but I'll say it. You had so many injuries last year. You need help. You need good luck. You need good fortune. You need good luck. You know, essentially, you're just saying, give us a fighter's chance, man. We like what we have, but we need to have guys that can stay healthy. So that's a big, big thing. So I will say that as well. But Block joining us, eighth year with the Rocks. Good, good friend of the program. It is a March tradition here in the jungle. Buddy, appreciate you. Appreciate the friendship. And it's always great to have you on the show, bud. Thank you so much.
Jim, appreciate it. I love when March comes around because I know I'll be talking to you, brother. So thanks, Jim.
You're the best, buddy. Appreciate you too, brother. Bud Block. Let's go to the phones. We go to Claremont. Lane, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, what's up, Jim? Thanks for taking my call.
You got it. What's up?
Hey, I had a dream also about the 30th anniversary Smack Off. I dreamt that it was in Vegas as like a live show, like the mother of all tour stops, right? So you have it live, you stream it live. Every contestant has to actually walk up to the mic and deliver their smack, except for Jeff from Richmond, of course. He'll have to be backed up on a, you know, flatbed or something. But, you know, if you make it through your smack for consideration of the top 10, you get the screaming adulation of thousands of belligerent clones. You get your back slaps and high fives and nut punches from all the other contestants and boot punches, too. Let's not be belligerent here. But if you don't make it through your smack, okay, if you get run, you immediately fall through the trap door that's in the stage, and you are fed to Siegfried and Roy's tigers, okay? And for this reason, and for this reason alone, you give Ryan from Sacramento his golden ticket. So he ends up as a steaming pile of cat excrement that he's always been, okay? So please, make it happen. I will buy the front row center ticket. I'll be there. Make this dream come true. Hey, War Arden Moreno selling the team, please, and on War Elon the Muskrat. I'm out. Thank you.
All right. So there's some good things and some not as good things in that. The one thing that stood, and you say what you want about Elon, say what you want about Artie. The thing that stands out to me is him saying that if you get run during the smack off, he said, okay, let me backtrack. He said, I also had a dream. I mentioned the other day that I had a dream, an actual dream, about the 30th Smack Off. He said, me too. I dreamt that it was in Vegas and that it was up on a big stage and that if you won or you got racked, you got the screaming adulation of thousands of clones. However, if you got run, there was a trap door in that stage and you fell below to Siegfried and Roy's tigers. Therefore, you want to give Ryan in Sacktown the golden ticket so he could, quote, become the cat excrement that he has always been. See what that guy just did with that? In other words, the Tigers would eat whoever fell through, and then that would be turned into cat excrement. Wow, dude. That was pretty creative. Points for creativity, dude. A smack off in Vegas. You should be pretty careful. There may be some budgetary issues there. We'd have to fly everybody in, put everybody up. Everybody gets a suite, right? their own suite. What about the people that we bring in that don't get on the air? That's a pretty heavy cost. That's prohibitive. Then we have to build the stage. I don't know. It might be a big lift. It might be too heavy a lift. That's not light work. I'd have to rent the Lions and Tigers from Siegfried and Roy. I'm not sure PETA will approve. That's not light work. That's a heavy lift. But, I appreciate it. We'd have to build a custom stage with that trapdoor. I wonder where we do it. Callers will have to sign a disclaimer stating that they're okay with, in the event that you get run, death is possible. Essentially signing their life away for an opportunity at $5,000 and immortality. A lot of pressure on Alvin, because what if he hits the wrong button and runs them? Because the button clearly will be attached to the trap door. Alvin's run button will be attached to the trap door. And if Alvin hits the wrong button, somebody falls through. And then within a matter of hours, they will be cat growler. Yeah, this might be a bit much. Yeah, I'd say that's too heavy a lift. However, I appreciate the thought and the creativity behind it. You know, when I was in New York last week at the X offices, one of the high-ranking officials there said, you know what? You ought to do the show here for a week. I'm like, you know what? I'm looking around these offices. I like that idea. That I can do. That's not as heavy a lift as what you just proposed. All right, there's a call. I like it. 1-800-636-8686. Anybody else with any other ideas for Smack Off 30? Because I thought that I would just do Smack Off 30. But it is going to be different again because it will be on the X platform. Everything will be different on the X platform. Let's go to Boise. Why don't we roll a few telephone calls? Hit us up. Spin the wheel. You might get Jack Savage. You might get Tommy. Alvy may sneak up and pick up the phone. You never know. Let's go to Boise. Mike. What's going on, Mike? How are you?
Hey, doing good. You know, it's obvious it's time for the first Jim Rome Smack-Off playoff. Let's take the four best guys and put them in two rooms together and talk about animosity. Meanwhile, your staff, R14I, they get the best rooms. So make it easy on yourselves and hard on the contestants and take the smack off to Vegas. Anyway, good job.
All right, dude. So now we got a whole format change. All right. You know what? Listen, if you're not good enough to be in the smack off, why not just call and tell us how to hold the smack off? Now we have format changes. We have trap doors. We have a final four. I think he said put four of them in a room and the XR4TI can watch. Are they going to smack each other and then the last one standing wins? Or are they going to smack until the death? I'm not really sure where he was going with that. All I know is the last two people to call have had an idea that put contestants' lives in jeopardy, either to be eaten by tigers or to kill each other? Dude, this isn't the UFC. This isn't MMA. This is the smack off. Verbal jousting. Anybody else with any ideas? I always thought that the callers alone made it what it was, but apparently not. Apparently we need props. Apparently we need a bigger show for the biggest show. Take it to Vegas. What we need is, apparently, you know, it's like the Roman Colosseum back in the day. You want blood. You want me to go thumbs up or thumbs down. You want somebody to pay the ultimate price. And apparently that somebody is Ryan in Sacktown. I don't know. Quote, let's have Ryan be the cat excrement that he's always been. That's a line to remember. Anybody else? Obviously, I'm wide open. I'm open to your ideas. Those are both a bit extreme. I don't know that anybody's going to risk their life for five gur. I know you want to win. 1-800-636-8686. It would certainly raise the stakes, right? There's some rhino hate. It's not even a beef day. Rhino's kind of harmless. I don't think we should put him in harm's way. A trap door for Siegfried and Roy's tigers and lions. All right, anybody else want in? Let's see what we got here. Hey, Romy. Nope, that's from Geoff. I'm not going to read that. Hey, Rome Slice. The 24 Chouds are just like the 98 Bulls. 20 years from now, I wonder if Jason Tatum's son will get nice with Jaylen Brown's wife. War, what's poppin', Twitter? Rob Myrtle Beach. That's pretty well played. Jimmers, if Alvin DeLauro went all formerly known as Alvin and decided to be like Prince and change his name to a symbol, what would that symbol be? My guess, eggplant emoji. That was Abigail.
War Lady Clones.
Mr. Rome, LeBag is one of the most unlikable athletes in the history of sports. I am counting the days until he retires, other than the fact that his retirement will be 12 months of more bagginess. Wore a torn Achilles to speed things up a bit. Greg and Prescott, notice I'm not saying anything of the sort. I'm not saying any of those things. I'm not wishing any harm to this guy. I'm absolutely not rooting for him to get hurt. Don't do that. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that a lot of times when he opens his mouth, what comes out makes no sense whatsoever. But you're not wrong. He's going to want that goodbye tour. He'll want that farewell tour. And it will get baggy. I just don't know how in a moment like that, when he scores 40,000 points, that's the first thing that comes to mind. Hey, man, that's incredible. As you look back on your life, you look back on your career, you look back on your 40,000 points, what do you remember? Like, what's it like? What's that feel like? Well, I remember that when I got to the NBA, pretty much everybody wanted me to fail.
To be quite honest with you.
How do you remember that? It's not true.
Everybody wanted to see me fail when I got to the league.
What?
Everybody was just like, it's no way he's going to be able to exceed, you know, the expectations that's put upon
him. Let
me
stop right there. When you say, to be quite honest with you, do you really mean to be not honest at all?
To be quite honest with you?
To be not honest at all, I remember everybody wanting me to fail. That simply is not true. I mean, there might have been some. But to make it sound like everybody wanted you to fail, if by everybody wanting you to fail, you mean that so many people were in a rush to anoint you as the next big thing, then yes, I would agree. Major publications, major corporations falling over themselves to give you money and run and shine. Then yes, I would agree with you. ESPN was putting you on television when you were in high school. Sports Illustrated, when Sports Illustrated was still a thing, was putting you on the cover of their mag. Shoe companies were fighting over the right to give you the biggest bag. What do you mean everybody wanted you to fail?
That was insane.
It makes no sense at all. Let's go to North Dakota. I like it that you all want to reinvent the game. I'm open for it. I'm open to it. After all, I am the host of the Reinvention Project with Jim Rome. Let's go to North Dakota. Mike, what's going on, Mike? How are you?
Hey, Jimmy. Been listening forever. Just real quick, Hunger Game style Vegas. Smack off. I'm out.
Hunger style or Hunger Game style. Again, you're taking a verbal sport and turning it into a physical sport. The three ideas, and by the way, I didn't actually solicit any ideas, but I'm open to them. The three ideas so far have been as follows. Create a stage in Vegas with a trap door. If you run a participant, they fall through said trap door to where they have to somehow survive Siegfried and Roy's tigers. Ryan in Sacktown will not. He will get eaten alive and turned into cat excrement. That's the leader in the clubhouse right now. The second guy, I think, said, just have it like a tournament and have the Final Four together and put them in a room. And you, as members of the XR4TI and the judges, can watch them smack or fight to the death. At least that's what I think he meant. And that guy just said, why not go Hunger Games format? These are all physical formats. It's a verbal sport, not a physical sport. Anybody else? Let's try another one. We go to Frank in Texas. Hey, Frank, how are you? What's up?
Hey, Jimothy. How about this? We have the annual SmackDown over at the halftime Super Bowl. Winner gets to go with the winning team to Disneyland. I'm out.
The annual SmackDown? During Super Bowl halftime? Frank, my dude, there is so many things wrong with that. Number one, the SmackDown is not going to be counter-programmed against the Super Bowl halftime. The Super Bowl halftime probably is more watched than the Super Bowl itself. I don't think, as much as I love the SmackDown, I don't want to compete with that. Number two, the one thing that the SmackDown may not be able to beat, the one thing that I, quote, don't want to put the SmackDown up against is the Super Bowl halftime show. SmackDown winners can call. I don't want to do that. Number two, it's not the SmackDown. It's the Smack Off. If you want to give me an idea on what the format should be for the 30th annual SmackDown, you need to do better than that. First, get the name of the event right. And then let's certainly not program it against the most watched thing ever. Let's be smart about this. Let's keep going. I'm just banging ideas, rolling ideas, soliciting ideas. Now I am. I wasn't before, but I am now. What is your idea for the 30th Smack Off? How should I do it? Where should I do it? What should it involve? I thought just it being number 30 and it being streamed for the first time ever would be juice enough, but apparently not. Apparently y'all want to see blood too. It's not a blood sport. It's a verbal sport. Anthony in Puma. There you go. See, Alvy? Hey, Alvy, that was incredible. That was so creative. Did you just go with the Senator Trent blood bank drop on me? That was so creative, Alvin. That goes back to hour number one. What an artist, Alvin. What an artist. Anthony, Pomona. Anthony, what's up?
Hey, Rami, I just want to call in and want to know why every clone wants to devise these games where people die. Hey, clone fans, if you want to devise a game where people die, why don't you just do 10 push-ups and then call the room show and try to have a take? And just see if you can make it through. See if you can make it through a couple of puffs. Because I know all of you guys out there are just a bunch of fat cream puffs. And you know what, Ryan, you suck, dude. Stop calling. And that's it. Boot.
Rakim?
Rack him.
That definitely was one of the better calls today. Why do all you clones want to see other clones die? If you want to see a clone die, have one get down, drop down, give me 10, and then pick up the phone and try and call. And then one will die. Hey, Rhino. Anytime. Come on in, Rhino. Come and get some, Rhino. There, oh, Anthony.
Good night now.